Brother Scholengo. Listen, let's not kid ourselves. 36 years later, to be able to get together with all of you is something very, very special. For a long time, I arrived in Toronto on, I believe it was Lamed Dalet Baomer, 1959. You see, I wanted to take a shave first. I waited till after Lag BaOmer. You think I was going to come over here to Toronto, you know, it's overgrown. So I waited till, I think it was Lamed Gimel BaOmer, there was a goodbye party for me in the yeshiva, and then in Baltimore, and then I came to Toronto. I had been asked earlier that year in January, well, Shiva gets a hold of me and he says, Shalom, reveals all Smith coming in the aim. So I went to his house, and he told me about a number of balabatim in a place called Toronto that want to establish a yeshiva, and he wanted to know if I would go. It was one of those decisions that in life that took me under 60 seconds, and I said, sure, hineni, I'm ready. And I arrived, and I remember very clearly, it was an extremely important moment in my life. Like a schlepper, I arrived with a hat box, you know, tied up with string, a suitcase that had seen better days, and I found myself at 16 Strathern Road, the Lubavitchs, Maya Lubavitch. So I want to tell you, first of all, about my Mesiris Nefesh, Fortera. You will hear my Mesiris Nefesh, and then a lot of the things that I was able to accomplish during those early years. My first Mesiris Nefesh was Friday night. I hate fish. I despise fish. And this fellow Lubavitch had gone fishing that day. So I had to watch Friday afternoon as the fish is being prepared, and stand the eyeballs, everything in it. I hate fish. But I was afraid that if I wouldn't eat the fish Friday night, Teichel would simply cease to exist in Toronto. Would we all be over? So I'm telling you, it was the greatest act of Mesiris Nefesh for Teichel. I ate the fish, but I put so much chrain on the plate that by the time I was finished with the fish, you know, there was a lot of chrain left. I remember Maya Lubavitch turning to me, Shalom, the chrain. And I ate it all up. The next day, Shabbos lunch, first Shabbos in Toronto. So I was invited to the home of Julius Kuhl, Olav Shalom. Julius Kuhl. Now here I want to tell you a story. I come into the house. It was on Richview Avenue? Okay. I went to Richview Avenue, and I walk into a house that was really a museum. Works of art. Now I'll tell you the truth. A few weeks early in the yeshiva, in Arizona, in Baltimore, there were always fellows that were sending away to these book club things. You know, you get a few books free, and if you choose to join whatever Book of the Month club it was. So there were fellas sending away. There's so many things started arriving in the yeshiva. And I walk into somebody's room in the dormitory. Of course, this was Bein Hastarim. And there was a book on the first in a series on French Impressionist artists. So I sat down and I looked at the book, and it was interesting. There weren't too many words over there. Most of it was pictures and big letters, you know, so it was pretty easy to go through it. And I got a feeling a little bit about French Impressionist art. And here you understand the Yeshiva Bacher has come to build a yeshiva in Toronto. And I come in for lunch at the Kuhl's, and Now, you have to know how to do this. I think I sort of just casually looked at the wall and I said, Julius, that's a beautiful Renoir. First of all, you should know that I was right. Second of all, you could have picked Julius up from the floor. Rabbi, how did you know? I mean, obviously, I didn't even deign to answer a question as ridiculous as that. How did I know? How did I know? Talking about a man of the world, you're not stumped getting some yeshiva bachi here at the building. You hear that? Imamish, the man became my friend, Lailam Fayed. He was so impressive. What do you learn from the whole story? Hashgacha Pratis, that those nuts in the yeshiva there had to start sending away for all these stupid books. And I walked into the room and I sat and everything, there's a tachlis for everything. I impressed him. I impressed him. The truth is, I was very impressed with myself. I knew I was taking a chance. So here it was. Here it was, first of all, I ate fish Friday night. I was able to identify a Renoir, and believe me, I didn't say another word after that the rest of the meal. I was afraid, you know, I'd stop messing it up. All right. It was a very lonely existence, I must say. The first few months, I had come alone. I was 24 years old. I was not married at the time. I was a bacher, and I was given the job of starting the yeshiva. And of course, the general feeling in town was, who is this fellow? What kind of a yeshiva is this going to be? There were always parents who felt, my child is not going to be a guinea pig. But I met a lot of nice people. I sat in the back of stores on St. Clair and on Bathurst. I met all sorts of people, and I went from house to house. And I tell you, it had reached the point about 6-7 weeks, end of June, middle of July, that I was here, and the yeshiva has to open in 6 weeks. And I had one student. The one student was Akiva Chaim Rosenthal. But he didn't count. He didn't count because he was from Sudbury. He was from Sudbury. He wasn't here. Is that a kid? You see, what I needed desperately was somebody in Toronto. His father then was rabbi in Sudbury, and when he heard that there's going to be a yeshiva in Toronto, what he wanted more than anything else was his son should come to yeshiva. It's the first one, and I want to... we couldn't have pulled off a better one than this. I don't believe your 50th birthday. He was a cute little boy then. Mazel tov. But I was saying, right after I said such nice things about you, I said you didn't count. Because we needed somebody in Toronto. Somebody in Toronto. And I'll never forget, I was sitting in the Lubavitch home then, and I already had visions that I'd be going back for the Elsman to Baltimore, and everybody would ask me, what happened? So I'd have to say, I could have been honest and say that I failed. I could have said, Toronto, what a bunch of people over there. They don't deserve to have a yeshiva. You know, the blame game is always great. You always blame somebody else. And when I had reached the point of greatest despair, Ruth Greif called up and said that she wants to... Rabbi, I'm going to send my Heshi, Olav HaShalom. I'm sending Heshi to the yeshiva. And that was it. And then everybody else fell into line in a matter of a week. They were just... all five or six of them were falling all over each other to get into the yeshiva. But we did end up with 12 students for the first class, yeshiva, 12 students. And it was an extremely difficult period of time. I mean, maybe we'll even tell you. I think one of the most nerve-wracking evenings of my life was the night before the yeshiva opened. It was even worse than being in jail in Yerushalayim. Being jailed in Yerushalayim is something to be extremely proud of. I mean, when they hauled me into jail a few weeks ago, I said, "B'li Shem Amalchus Shachiyonu V'Kimonu V'Giyonu L'Azman Azeh Ashrei Shenitfasti Al Davar Zeh." I mean, it wasn't part. You know what I did the night before the yeshiva opened? You're not here now, but I remember it must have been about 12, 1 o'clock. I was all alone in that big estate. You know, I heard ghosts floating through. By the way, you may not know, it was called the Tyrol Estate. And all sorts of terrible things that happened there until the yeshiva bought that property. I don't know, there were all sorts of suicides and murders. I don't know, everything. All sorts of Gilgulim were flying through that building during the course of the night. And of all things, I hear a knock on the door. Nobody's supposed to come till the morning. There's a knock on the door. Meyer Weinstock came to keep me company. Meyer Weinstock, we knew each other from the Yisrael, Baltimore. Meyer Weinstock came, "Hi, tomorrow morning the yeshiva is opening up." So he came, and I, Zohar Oso Ha'ish Latov, for having come to join me then. So there it was. This was a time, of course, when from Shepherd on, Bathurst was a dirt road. I mean, one of the great mistakes of my life was that I didn't buy up all sorts of tracts of land. Yeah. On the yeshiva salary, of course, I couldn't afford to buy anything. I mean, here it was, the first day was coming, and it was an extremely exciting thing, and the Bachram came, and the yeshiva started. And they sent a number of Elder Bachrim from Ner Yisrael. We ended up then with 12 Elder Bachrim and 12 students in a grade 9. I think there was never such a ratio of Elder Bachrim to little kids in all of history. And some of the first-year Talmidim are here right now. Meichil, you are a first-year. You are a first year. Who else? I'm looking at Menachem Mendel. Menachem Mendel Weissman was a Shlomi Schwartz. You weren't even bar mitzvah, right? You weren't even. I wrote your bar mitzvah speech. I even remember it. I made a shtick player on the beer halacha, first beer halacha in Hilchus Tfilin, on Malam Bakodesh. You don't remember? Who else? Who else? Is nobody else who was here? Well, there was Aaron Weisblatt was. Aaron Weisblatt was second year. Joey Greenbaum? Joey, what are you talking about? Joey, of course, yeah. That was the store on St. Clair. Huh? Lukowitz. You're tremendous, I remember. Then listen, there were... Let's say the following. There are certain things you remember for a lifetime. That there were embarrassing moments. There were comical moments. The most embarrassing moment of them all. One day, everybody's in the Beis Medrash. The whole yeshiva was in the Beis Medrash. And they bring in a gvir. It's a gvir, an old tegi, very hard of hearing. So he spoke in a loud voice. Where are they from? And then I'm embarrassed. But let's see, what would you do if you'd be in my position? The whole base medrash is silent because they're listening to this fella. Then he turns to me and he says, Rebbe, zut me Rebbe, you are boy or you married? What do you think I answered? It's like asking somebody, are you for land or for peace? You see, I got the politics in, you see, through the back door. Are you a boy or are you married? I'll tell you, the truth is, Adayom, I can't figure out a good answer to give him. What should I tell him? You know, that's a complex question. What do you mean by a boy and what do you mean by married? No, I'm not a boy. Then the comical moment, of course, was the only Hebrew you fellas ever learned then is upstairs, the servants' quarters. We turned into the staff quarters. Rav Chaim Mintz was over there, and I put up a sign, Haknisa Asura. Prohibited. I have to translate, of course. It's like Yeshiva Bachram who end up in Eretz Yisrael to learn for the year or 2 years, whether they're in Brisk, in Mir, in Beis Yisrael, in Tomo, in their Moshe, in their Yaakov. So they come home. Their total knowledge of Ivrit, of course, is Tachana Merkazit and Kartisia. That's it. They don't know anything else. So this, everybody in the yeshiva knew Haknisa Asura. This wasn't the second year of the yeshiva. During that, the second year, my roommate, I was still a boy. Understand? So my roommate was not the shiller. And during that second year, what I did was I needed help to go visit during registration time. After Pesach, we started going from house to house. We had the lists of everybody who was in the graduating class in Eitz Chaim and then associated, and we went from house to house every night for a matter of 2 months. Every night, about 5-6 o'clock, we shave, we shine our shoes, we get a nice tie out, we went out. I schlepped him along with me. You know, we had to train him to start Or Sameach. I mean, what do you think he was going to... Well, you think he's the only one I trained when I made Baruch Taub into the great dormitory counselor that he was? He always tells me, Shalom, he remembers Adayom HaZeh, how I took him through the dormitory and I showed him how to run his finger along the floor under the beds to see if it was really clean. So I went out with Nota Shiller. We went out night after night. There were times that we were out very late at night and we were exhausted in the morning. And I know Meisha said that it's important to come to Minyan and you need Chizik, right? But there were even times that we missed Minyan in the morning because we were out, of course, saving Klal Yisrael and Torah. One morning, one of the Balabatim, here his name, he will remain nameless. One of the Balabatim has to talk to me, and it's about 7 o'clock in the morning, and the Geis HaShiv is fast asleep. So that Balabaz dared to open the door of Haknisa Asura. And he came into the room, and he's standing over my bed, and he says, Shalom, I have to talk to you, Shalom. Reb Shalom, I think he said. I wake up, I mean, it's extremely, extremely embarrassing. So Nata Shila turns over in bed. He says, Shalom, I didn't call room service. I never saw a person run out of a room as quickly as that. It was absolutely Absolutely amazing. It was a very difficult job. Believe me, starting the yeshiva was a difficult job, but I always had the feeling that at difficult moments in my life, the schus of having had a hand in starting the yeshiva was the schus for which the Rebbeinu said, okay, Gold, we're going to pull you out of this one first. We let you sweat. And I've sweat a number of times in my life. And we'll pull you out, but we'll pull you out the schus of having had a hand in starting the yeshiva. It was a very, very, very special experience. The Balabatim, I mean, a lot of very nice Balabatim. I mean, I even liked some of them. I remember a Yid like Heschel Rubinstein. Heschel Rubinstein was the one who gave the seed money to start the yeshiva, so of course his name was just perfect for the first Purim play when we turned him into Rubel Herschelstein. He was the one export packers. The chickens used to come from him. So, of course, the great refrain of one of those great songs that someday you'll have to get the whole gang of us together, Mitarnish Zaina Chicken. That was really, it was an extremely important message. And the truth is, it's a message for life, Mitarnish Zaina Chicken. Person has to be able to stand up and be tough and stand for something. There were a lot of... very special to him. And going back to that first Shabbos, you know, they, I think, what was it, in the morning, I davened in Burnside. Burnside was the Aguda, understand? I had to be even-handed. Burnside in the morning, and Von Road, the Mizrahi, in the afternoon. I mean, understand, we have to be very delicate balancing act over here, you know. They couldn't figure out what is this guy anyway. By the way, they still can't figure me out. In Harnof, they can't figure me out. Guy looks from, doesn't sound so from, is involved in all sorts of things. So here it was, I think I started my career moving from Burnside to Vaughan Road. I'm still doing the same thing. I remember, I think I said a sheer... the first Shabbos, it was a shir on Daf Lamed Gimel Amid Aleph in Shabbos, the Agadita there, that Gemara. I forgot how I arrived here. Well, how do you think I arrived in Toronto? What do you think? We flew by planes in those days. First of all, I had expected, of course, I came by train, by sleeper, so I'd have an opportunity to prepare the shir. And I thought for sure some dog sled would take me off to whatever igloo I was going to. I mean, you know, I was a New Yorker. New Yorkers are the most provincial cosmopolitan people in the world. They're the ones who think that the world begins and ends in New York in general and in Borough Park specifically. And the rest of the world doesn't exist. Toronto is Canada. Canada is cold, you know. So I really had absolutely no idea. And it was fascinating to see that there were people and there were houses. And well, there were, let's say that there were other... there were a lot of extremely, extremely special people that I met during the course of those years. And when I kept walking that tightrope, I think I don't know whether that was the beginning or my end, I still remember the first Yom HaTzma'ut a year later, so they had a gathering in Von Road, Mizrahi, and the Hoshiva spoke the Ivrit, me. I was pretty good. I remember the speech bal peh. I kept walking around for weeks trying to prepare this, you know, and I got up there, Lifnei shtei mestrei shana kama medina atzmait yehudit bi'eretz Yisrael. Boy, they ate it up over there. They loved every minute of it. So I kept moving in these two directions. A lot of very special people. Special people, not only students and parents, amongst Balabatim, there were people who were really very special. Remember, I don't think anybody remembers the fellow Shia Watzman. Remember fellow Shia Watzman? Oh, Shalom. Why do I remember Shia Watzman? Shia Watzman I remember because he came over to me the second year the yeshiva was in existence, and he tells me, Rabbi Gold, we did something for the boys, now we have to do something for the girls. So I said, Shia, you're absolutely right. Let's call a meeting. We called a meeting, and that was the birth of Beis Yaakov. That's how it was born, precisely like that. Doing something for the girls. What was the rest? Well, so I told you about my first Friday night meal, that great act of Mesiras Nefesh, my brilliance Shabbos in the morning. Shalosh Shudas was at the home of Maya Gassner, Olav Shalom, and Saul Siegler was there. That's when I met Saul and Maya Gassner. And I was worried, I didn't know who these people are. It was amazing. The meal that he prepared, matzah, hard eggs, and cheese. I didn't know who these people were. Like, can you imagine? I started Shabbos with fish, and I ended with matzah and hard eggs. Here were very, very special people who gave all of their effort. Their whole neshama went in order to establish Teira and the yeshiva of it. Ichamaya Kaholnik. Ichamaya Kaholnik. What are you talking about? Ichamaya Kaholnik. At meetings, the most fascinating, I think it was a meeting in Saul Siegler's house, down in the basement, and he saw a bottle that he never saw before. Believe me, no meeting took place that night. Ichamaya walked around the kid, cafe bottle. they were a very special breed of people. Gidel Weinstock was also one of the early founders. Nachman Sokol, you understand, there you had the Agudah, Mizrahi, a whole bunch. There were a lot of very special people. Then, of course, came the A few years later, the new generation, Solange Jochen, moved in, you know, the Hofstetters and the Blemens, you know, but that's for somebody else's history to write. But I do remember the first time Maya Lubavitk told me that he wanted me to meet this fellow, Sandy Hofstetter. I don't even know what kind of impression I ever made on him, you know. I didn't know any paintings that he had in his house. I had nothing, there was nothing in there. Thank God he didn't offer me fish, okay. I feel that it was a tremendous schus to have participated in the construction of a yeshiva, building a yeshiva in Toronto. They were very, very special years. They were very difficult. There was a lot of work. There were all sorts of criticism. And I'm afraid that this is something that continues ad hayom hazeh. Nobody's ever happy around here with any school. And I tell you, they weren't happy with any school or any yeshiva 36 years ago. Was the same thing. The same complaints you heard about Eitz Chaim then you hear today, and what you heard about Associated then you hear about it today. It's all the same in certain respects. While everything changes, everything remains the same. Regrets? Are there any regrets that I have? And any message? Yeah. I'd say two things I regret. I tried. I would have wanted, if I could have, to have instilled in the Talmidim a profound love of Eretz Yisrael. Something that has simply not been done in yeshivas. It troubled me. I recall a story. This is an apocryphal story. The year 68, the year after the Six-Day War, came the great day, Chof Ches Iyar Yom Yerushalayim, 1 year from the time that Yerushalayim had been liberated, had become part of the property of Klal Yisrael. 87 battles had been fought in 2,000 years over Yerushalayim, and finally it becomes the property of Klal Yisrael, the great moment of Chesed. Great moment of the Chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the great Matana. So I wanted the yeshiva to mark it. So remember, we were sitting in the dining room at lunch, and I spoke to all the rabbeim, and I said, listen, it's a special day. You've got to do something. I said, let's dance. Let's have the Bachram dance. Something. Sing a song about Yerushalayim. Historic. Nah. Svira. Hey, listen. Svira can't do nothing. I was outvoted 10-1. Helfter Rebbeinu Shalom. A few minutes later, one of the Elder Rebbeim walks in, and in those days, the minhag was, if you got engaged, you gave out cigarettes. Nobody would do that today. And he starts giving out cigarettes. He got engaged. All of a sudden, a burst. The whole table gets up. The whole dining room is dancing. And I remained sitting at the table. And when they all came back afterwards, I just looked at them and I said one word. Svira. So what did I do to get back at them? I sent word that if the Bachram are going to dance around the front of the courtyard, nobody will be marked absent for the first two periods. Do you think there was a single soul in the yeshiva who wasn't dancing that day for Yerushalayim? Not only that, they went into extra innings. The third period too. And as far as I'm concerned, it was one of the finer things that I did. There's a sense that we have to have a special relationship. We're living in very special times. We're living, of course, now in extremely difficult times. But the gift of Eretz Yisrael and an appreciation of what Eretz Yisrael means, just the idea that there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz. How many yeshiva bachim I've had in my house, and any yeshiva bach who comes to my house for a Friday night or a Shabbos meal knows that he comes at great personal risk. But they come and they keep coming back. It's a mitzvah. And it's one of those forgotten or lost mitzvahs. Especially in our day. A mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz. I couldn't get it. I don't know. It was a taboo subject. I didn't succeed. I succeeded in that respect in other places. From Toronto, I went to West Hempstead. And West Hempstead, which I served as Rav for 11 years, has the largest percentage of families that came on Aliyah in the entire United States. We have a group of some 500, 600 nefashis people that came from West Hempstead while living in Eretz Yisrael. I didn't do it here. I didn't succeed. The only area in which we succeeded was the idea that Bachram should go learn for a year in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, 2 years, because a little bit of my history, I was one of the first that did it in America. I went to learn in Eretz Yisrael in 1955 and 56. And the powers that be were not happy about my going then to yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. There were a total of 15, 16 Americans learning in all of Eretz Yisrael. Yet you count the number of yeshivas at Eretz Yisrael on one hand. The greatest explosion of Torah learning in history has taken place in Eretz Yisrael in the last 35 years. There were a few hundred Talmidim in 1955, 56. We're talking tens of thousands today. And a veritable explosion of Torah learning unparalleled in Jewish history. And that was one of the things that I wanted to get across. There was another thing that I wanted to get across, and I spoke about this Shalashudas today. I'm not going to say everything that I said there, but I was reminded of it. I walked into, was it My Zadie's? What's the name of the cafe? Shelley, yeah, for breakfast. And one of the old boys comes walking by me and he says, Rebbe, Hoy goy chayte am keved avon zer amireim apostle from the beginning of Yeshayahu. I taught him Yeshayahu. And 25 years later, 30 years later, there he is. He's quoting the pasuk in Yeshayahu for me. Limud HaTanach, in addition to a chiddush a week, I don't mean to diminish the chiddush a week, the Torah, the Aveda. By the way, in tefillah, you should be mispalel l'shlomo shel Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael needs the tefillahs of each and every Jew. And the idea of Bashit, I had quoted, the only thing I'll quote is Rab David, the Chetzalik and Rab David Kronglass, the Ashbiach in Baltimore. I'll never forget this Shmuas. He described a great Talmud Chacham. Nu Rambam, Shas, backwards and forwards, real big London, Mechadesh Chidushei Torah. And Rab David, in his inimitable way, describes, I'll have to say it in Yiddish, and then I'll translate it for you into English. He's talking about the petira of this great Talmud Chacham, Melek Demarein in Keve, Unken Iev, Hat er nicht aufgeffend, in Latin. They're laying him to rest at the grave, and he never opened a Sefer Iyov in his whole life. Never opened a Sefer Iyov in his life. So, to all the other words of Chizuk, what I add is, and I remember watching this as a boy, and then I was a real boy, as a counselor in Camp Aguda, Biankiv Kamenetsky, Zechet Tzadik L'Vrocha, every day after davening, read two prokim of Tanakh. Every day, without fail. He must have gone through Tanakh hundreds of times. Listen, men, Pashit Zechet Tzadik HaSyamim, you learn two prokim a day of Tanakh, you finish from Yoshua till the end of Divrei Yomim, every year. And Tanakh for us is a, with the people of the book, and it's a closed book. I tried, maybe I didn't try hard enough, but those are the two areas in which I have regrets. One thing I don't regret, and don't misunderstand what I'm going to say now. Leaving Toronto. And I remember when the day we left Toronto, I told my wife, we are coming 600 miles closer to Eretz Yisrael. Now I'll tell you the real story. I had come back after learning 2 years in Eretz Yisrael, and I wanted to finish, college. Listen, what can you do? And I finished right before I came to, I took my last exams before I came to Toronto. Finished the semester, master's in education, which, by the way, was extremely helpful. At least I knew the educational jargon. I had to talk with all of these fellas over here in the province, and I was able to talk about felt needs and IQs and heterogeneous and homogeneous. They were so impressed as Julius Poole was. My original plan had been, as soon as I finish, I wanted to go back to Eretz Yisrael. I was planning on returning to Eretz Yisrael in the summer of 1959. But there was a detour in my life. The detour was Toronto. And I really had thought originally, listen, you know, maybe I'll become a trailblazer, you know, build a yeshiva in Toronto, go on elsewhere, build a yeshiva there. But I wanted to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And I became very emotionally attached to Toronto, I would say even before I met Mendel's sister. I mean, obviously the Hashgacha the Hashgacha obviously wanted that the boy should become married right over here, which of course he did. All of our children were born in Toronto. But the original plan was to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And there was a detour. It was a detour of some 20 years? From 59 until 82 that we were zeichet to go to Eretz Yisrael. I lived in very, my wife always says that you took us to great places. What do you want? Toronto and New York. But there is nothing compared to having an address that ends with Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael. Nothing. Would I not have been zeichet to that, it most probably would have been the greatest disappointment of my life. I thank the Rebbeinu Shlomo every day that we were able to make it to Eretz Yisrael, and all of our children are there, and Kenai and Horeb, there are a bunch of grandchildren that speak English like my Zayda did. But I shed nachas when I hear them chattering around with one another, be a bit. But to Saba and Safta, they talk English. They're not certain that I know how to speak Hebrew. They're not so certain. I should have told them about the speech I made in Von Road on Yom HaTzmaut. I'm going to close with a fourth. I could reminisce for a long, long time. But I want to leave you with one fourth. Famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five students, and he told the five students, go out and see what is Derech Tova, the good path in life, she or Verlo Hard under the man should choose for himself. So they went out. One came back and said, Lev Tov, the other Ayin Tov, Shachin Tov, Chaver Tov. Reb Shimon said, Haro'e et hanolad. Usually we explain it as meaning to be able to anticipate the future. Rehoboam ben Zakkai then turned around and he told his Talmidim, go out and choose. Tell me what is the way that man should avoid in life. So the one who said Ayin Tova is the good way said Ayin Ra'ah. The one who said Lev Tov is good said Lev Ra'ah is bad. Shocking Tov, Shocking Ra, Chaver Tov, Chaver Ra, Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon, who said that the path in life is Haroe et Hanolad. That's the good path, says the evil path to be avoided like the plague is Love Ve'eno Mishalem, the one who borrows and does not repay. Echad Halovim in Ha'odam, Kelovim in Ha'mokom. Makes no difference whether you borrow from man or you borrow from God. A number of problems. Question number one, obviously, is why doesn't Reb Shimon do exactly what the other four do? The opposite of the good way is the bad way. So the bad way should be Mi she'eino ro'eh et hanolad, the one who does not see, is not able to anticipate the future. And then, furthermore, there's no question about it, lo ve'eino mishalem is bad. I mean, I'm not disputing that. But if we just put our heads to it, I think we can come up with a few avedas that are a little bigger than lo ve'eino mishalem. I think it shouldn't require much imagination. There are worse avedas, There are worse avedas. If he's looking already for avedas, so the worst aveda is lo ve'eino mishalem. There are terrible avedas in the world. Permit me a different approach. Haroe et hanolad can be understood in another way as well. Haroe et hanolad means the following. No one is born into a vacuum. We are all born into a society, a family, friends, a faith community, a culture. We are surrounded by an entire world of people. Our small world and the larger world. Nobody is born into absolute nothingness. From early childhood and from all of the generations who preceded us, There are impressions that are made upon our minds and our hearts. We receive a way of life, a morality, ethics. There are so many people who come before us who impact upon our existence. What Reb Shimon is saying is it's a responsibility for a man, haro'eh, to see himself as a nolad. To see himself as somebody who's born into this family, this society, this culture. You don't start off life alone. You're not the one alone. Do you know what it means, therefore, if I look at myself as a nolad, as one who's born into a society? I owe a debt, because whatever I am is the result of all of those who came before me and all of those who impacted upon me. Do you know what Reb Shimon is saying? We're all borrowers. We're all indebted to so many people. And do you know what you're supposed to do if you're indebted to people? You have a responsibility to pay. How do we pay the debt that we owe? Do you know how we pay the debt that we owe? If we were zeicher to be able to study Torah, if we were born into a faith community, if we were born into a society that made such a powerful impression on us, and what we are today is the result of all of those who came before us and who nurtured and raised us, then our responsibility therefore becomes, as borrowers, that we have to repay. And how do you repay? You repay by making certain that all that you had is going to be available for the next generation. You received a Torah chinuch, you're going to make sure that others are going to receive a Torah chinuch. You were born into a certain kind of community, you have to make certain that this is going to be there for others who are going to come after you. You have to see yourself as a nolad. I see it in myself. Don't for a moment think. Don't for a moment think that I feel I built the yeshiva. Nonsense! I was zeifer to be an instrument who was here, who walked into a community that people had prepared before me. There were balabatim here who had worked to establish day schools, people who gave so much of their time. Coming to the yeshiva, you gave me a rough time. Pervaded the kishkis out of me. But it's incumbent upon every one of us to see ourselves as nolad. Know that we are borrowers. And the responsibility of a borrower is to repay. And we repay by doing that and a great deal more to make sure that in this community there will be Torah. And in this community, they're going to learn Tanakh. They're going to be Mechadish Chidush Torah once a week. And write it all down at the end of... Have it all. A community that is finally going to wake up to the realization that one of the great challenges of our time is Eretz Yisrael. The Rebbein Shem gave us a great gift. What are we doing about it? Do we give a krechts? Do we say a tefillah, one tefillah? Do we shed one tear for the grave danger in which Eretz Yisrael finds itself? Just one. I'll be meichel the tear. Say evel Yerushalayim ircha with great kavana. Eretz Yisrael deserves at least that. And maybe it should not be out of the realm of possibility that our children should indeed live in Eretz Yisrael. Not a terrible tragedy. We are blessed borrowers. But I have the feeling that Ner Yisrael was zeicher to raise not only borrowers, but people who are paying the community back. People who are doing for this community and repaying in full the debt that they owe. And that makes me prouder than anything else. May the Rebbein Shalom give you all tremendous amount of kayach, gesund, wealth, and the wisdom to continue doing what you're doing and do a great deal more. Thanks for inviting me to this evening.